Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, Guy James Show listeners. Happy to have you with us this afternoon here at the TIB Broadcasting Tower in Southwest Florida, the Truth in Broadcasting Network. We're so glad to have you along with us today. We plan on having a great show for you. I do want to let you know a little later on in the program, we're going to have Marcy Winograd on the program. She's running for the 36th District of California. And the reason we're having Marcy Winograd on is there is a trend around the country, as I'm sure you know. Many of the grassroots people and the netroots people are sick and tired of the way a lot of our Democrats are voting in Congress, that they're not truly representing the Democratic Party. And Marcy's planning to change all that in the 36th District of California, running against Jane Harman, who's one of Bush's best friends. And so we'll have her on a little later on, and we plan on having several of those folks around the country running for those offices to show our solidarity with people who are trying to get Democrats to vote like Democrats. That's what it's all about. My goodness, what a beautiful day here in Southwest Florida. It's currently about, 85 outside and sunny. A gorgeous day, and I hope it's nice where you are as well. Did you all remember to get your clocks sprung ahead Saturday night? Did you all do that? I'm one of these paranoid people that, you know, as soon as I got home at 5 o'clock in the evening on Saturday night, had to run around and just put all the clocks ahead. I couldn't wait till later. I was afraid I'd forget, you know. But it's always interesting the next day to see how many people are late or early to some of them forget and turn their clocks back an hour. It causes many interesting situations. And hey, before I go any farther, I want to thank so many of you for writing your touching personal emails. I had a story about our little dog on here. Was it last week? Week before? We lost our little dog and we got another one named Kukla. And Kukla's a little Yorkshire Terrier, and now about, 10 weeks old, and just as cute as a button. And so helping to take our minds off the sorrow we felt for losing our other puppy. And I just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you, and there's been a lot of you sent emails about that, and we appreciate it so very, very much. So saw Kukla a little while ago, and doing fine, little 10-week-old Yorkshire Terrier, and just as playful and nice and fun could be. Kukla, why Kukla? That means Doll in Greek. How's that? Okay. Well, we've got a lot to talk about today. I'm sure some of you will give us a call. Our calls are going to be picked up automatically today. Yours truly run the studio by himself today. So we've got an automatic answerer on our phone machine. And when you call, you'll hear that. It'll pick it up. And just be patient. We'll be with you as soon as we can. And we'd love for you to call. That's the heart of any show like this, is your great phone calls. And, of course, all of our friends from Democrats.com, most especially DemocraticUnderground.com, we get lots of calls from those folks. 1-866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. That's how you can get a hold of us. We'd love to have you give us a call today. Let us know what's on your mind. So many things happened over the weekend once again. Lots of continued violence going on in Iraq. And, well, how many of you saw that John McCain interview yesterday? Oh, boy. Oh, boy. We're going to talk about that a little later on in the program. I know many of you will have something to say about that. Because, as you know, John McCain has been bandied about as unbeatable because so many Democrats, they think, would cross over and vote for him. Well, I wonder how many would vote for him after that performance he had on with Timmy Russert yesterday morning. Quite interesting, I thought. But again, you can give us a call, 866-546-5254. We'd just like to put out a great big hello to everybody all over the country and some of our folks, Jacob over in Finland, and Rob in the Marianas Islands, and who we got, Ezekiel in Australia. Zeke, glad to have you along with us. We have folks listening from around the world and some pretty odd times in some of these other countries, so we appreciate that so very much. And we're finding more and more that many, many, many program are downloading the program and listening to it on their MP3 players, whatever kind you may have. And we're glad to have you along with us, too, on your walk, your exercise, whatever it is you do while you're playing your MP3 player and listening to the program. So welcome to everybody. I know many of you saw this last week. It was quite a controversial article, and lots of comment about it. There was an article in the National Journal, I think it was Wednesday of last week, and don't nail me to that, but it nearly sent me over the edge when I read it. I'm usually a calm, collected guy, but now and then something will just send me right up the wall. And on that National Journal article last week, Murray Wass wrote, and I quote, "Karl Rove, President Bush's chief political advisor, cautioned other White House aides in the summer of 2003 that Bush's 2004 reelection prospects would be severely damaged if it was publicly disclosed that he had been personally warned." Listen to this carefully. "Bush had been personally warned that the key rationale for going to war had been challenged within his own administration. Rove expressed his concern shortly after an informal review of classified governmental records by the then Deputy National Security Advisor, Stephen J. Hadley. Hadley determined that Bush had been specifically advised." Listen carefully. "Bush had been specifically advised that claims he later made in his 2003 State of the Union address that Iraq was procuring high-strength aluminum tubes to build a nuclear weapon, that might not be true, according to government records and interviews." Now, if you have that, you know, read that paragraph by Murray Wass two or three times if you need to, but do firmly grasp the meaning of it. I'll tell you what it meant to me. It meant to me that we, you, me, all of us, we're doing a great disservice to this nation by allowing Bush and his gang of liars and thieves, as it were, to occupy the White House for even one more minute. We now have proof that a president of the United States told a number of huge lies in order to take this nation into war. They had planned it even before taking the oath of office. They cooked, they cherry-picked the intelligence, and they willfully stood before the people of the United States of America and told a pack of outrageous lies just so Bush Jr. could prove his manliness and act like the cock of the walk and pour untold billions of dollars into the coffers of the people who paid to get him elected. After reading this record of events leading up to the war by Stephen Hadley, coupled with the Downing Street memos and the more recent memo to the service from Great Britain, that we now have absolute, incontrovertible, undeniable proof that Bush's words leading us to war were the words of a traitor, a liar, and if we don't remove Bush and his entire despicable corporate corrupt gang of shameless liars from office, we're never going to live it down. You know, I ask, who among you wants to tell your kids and grandkids that you watched the President of the United States take us into a war based on what you knew to be a pack of insidious lies leading to the deaths of thousands of our American soldiers and untold thousands of innocent Iraqi citizens, but you stood idly by and you did nothing about it? I ask you, who among you wants to hang your head in shame while you tell the future generations about this sorry saga in American history? Are you willing to tell them, will we just wait until Bush's term was over so as not to make any waves during an election cycle? That we were afraid to speak out because we might offend some undecided voters because we were armed with the truth? It really ought to be abundantly clear by now that our governmental system is in the hands of people who will lie, cheat, steal, and yes, and I mean this, and you know it to be true, even kill, in order to hold on to power and have their way with the people of this nation. Does that sound a little bit harsh? Maybe it does. But they willingly sent thousands of our young kids to their death and thousands more to be maimed for life. They diverted billions of dollars our country can ill afford at a time like this to their friends in the military-industrial complex by the name of Halliburton, Kellogg, Brown, and Root, and the American public is afraid to act or speak out? We're in a war of Bush's choice with no idea as to when we'll get out of it, and some of you are willing to stay the course with this foolish man? This is so frustrating to me. I submit to you that if after digesting these memos that I've just mentioned, if you're still willing to support the actions of the Bush administration, then you are guilty of willful ignorance and behavior consistent with that of the worst kind of traitor to the ideals of America. If you can sit idly by and know that he is doing this and not say anything, You have not honored the flag. Over and over and over again, I've stressed that this has nothing whatsoever to do with Democrats against Republicans. This should be as nonpartisan an issue as an issue can get within the borders of this country. It has to do with right versus wrong, good versus evil, and competency and integrity. And as I've often mentioned, I was terribly let down and ashamed when Bill Clinton got caught with his pants down, literally with his pants down, but he governed the nation very well. And he led us with a great sense of fairness to all the people of this country. But I swear to you on all that I hold dear, that if this were Democrat Bill Clinton in office having done what Bush has done, I'd be clamoring for his removal for office as soon as humanly possible. And I doubt that in your heart of hearts, you real Republicans, I doubt that you're feeling very good about this Bush in the White House and his actions as a president. I doubt it. So in light of the silence by the great majority of good Republicans all around this country, I ask you, is your loyalty to Bush, or is your loyalty to your flag? Because, you see, that flag has to stand for something. That flag has to continue to be an inspiration to everyone who sees it as a symbol of hope and freedom and real democracy, not just here but around the world. I'm ashamed to say my own party, the Democrats, are behaving almost as disgustingly as Bush. Timid little wimps, anxiously viewing the polls every day to see if it's safe to poke their heads out of the holes they've been hiding in. You see, unless we clean house now, remove Bush and his entire gang from office, there's no use in desiring a real change in this nation. Sorely needed changes. Changes in foreign policy that might regain our integrity with the rest of the world. Changes in economic and social policies for the good of those in need of those changes. Unless the smell of the Bush administration is cleansed from Washington, D.C., I don't think we can move forward. Question is, do the Democrats have the stomach for this fight? Sadly, I doubt it. It's been said, and I know you've all heard it, but never more meaningfully than at this moment in time, that now is the time for all good men to come to the aid of their countrymen. And I'm asking all of you on the left and the right, do we have what it takes? Or will we be apologizing to future generations for decades to come for allowing our nation to begin a spiral, a downward spiral from which we may never recover? We're at a point right now that if something isn't done, we may very well find ourselves in a position from which we won't recover. This might be the beginning of the end of greatness for America. And I don't know about you, but I don't want that on my hands. I don't want it to be said that our generation stood by and let this happen. I don't want to be part of a group that stands by and lets this happen. I want to be part of a group that'll fight it tooth and nail. You know, I was so disgusted last week when I saw him give one of those speeches. He's a draft-dodging cheerleader. Him and his draft-dodging, gun-waving vice president sitting there, air-conditioned safety, lecturing the rest of us on, quote, losing our nerve, unquote. All the while they play with our soldiers' lives and our country's security. Lecturing the rest of America on losing their nerve. When these guys have committed what to this war? Any family members? No. I had a couple of you righties that listen to the show on a regular basis ask me why I talk about George Bush so much, that he can't run again. He's a lame duck. Why do we talk about him so much? It's simple. It's simple why we talk about him. Because he's a symbol of the Republican Party. He personifies everything that is wrong with their party. You know, and I'll ask you, what is right about the Republican Party right now? I'm not saying that Democrats are any great shakes right now either, but at least the grassroots of the Democratic Party stand for something good. The Republicans, in their silence over censuring this man or throwing his ass out of office, the Republicans have shown that the Republican Party stands for selfishness and greed and nothing else. If you think they stand in it for anything other than that, I'd like you to let me know. I'd like you to give me a call at 1-866-546-5254. Love to hear from you about that. I don't know. It's just one of those things that I can't get it out of my head that this is happening right now. I just can't believe at this time in history that this is happening. I don't want it to be on our watch, your generation, my generation. Why is it happening now? Well, I don't know. I hope you'll give us a call. 866-546-5254. Love to hear from you. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Will she come back? I kind of doubt it. I feel so lonesome, I'm gonna sing about it. Ain't got no money to win or lose. All I've got are the lonesome banjo blues. No turf or coal for the kitchen fire. It's damp and cold, it might even snow. But I've got an easy chair and I've got a banjo. Sit by the mirror, we'll play as a duo. Sit by the mirror, we'll play as a duo. Never been to Asia or Paraguay, but I got a world atlas and now I'm far away. I think of my granddad, I think of my brothers, I think when my daddy tucked us under the covers. I had a relation, it took a while to create it. Life was too easy, I had to complicate it. Now I've got this picture and I've got a banjo. Sit by the mirror, we'll play as a trio. Sit by the mirror, we'll play as a trio.
Hey, we're back here listening to the Guy James Show. So glad to have you along with us this afternoon. It's a lovely day here. I hope it's a lovely day where you're at as well. Hey, I do want to correct something. If we ever have a mistake on the program, by me or anybody else, I like to correct it. And it was mentioned on the program last week that Ollie North, during his Senate hearings, had brought up the name of Osama bin Laden. He did not. I went back. It was pointed out to me that he did not say that. And I went back and looked at the transcripts. And he spoke of Abu Nadel, who had the terrorist who had might have had a contract out on him. We don't know for sure. We'll never know. That's what led to him having that federal money spent on a security mechanism for around his house. So anyway, we wanted to clear that up. Also, I want to clear up. We told Ryan last week that Al Gore never said he invented the internet, and of course we checked that out and we were correct on that. He didn't say that at all. Well, hey, let's go to the phones. We got Greg with us. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Guy. Listen, I was just listening to what you were saying about Bush, and I agree and I disagree at the same time. Because first of all, of course, what Bush has done, if it were any president, Democratic or Republican, should be removed from office for the terrible things that he's done. At the same time, though, I think we have to be careful not to sort of fall into this cult of the personality thing, because I think an equally large problem is the fact that it's this whole current mindset about government that you know, if you're the leading party, the Republican Party, you have no accountability to anyone, you could do whatever you want, you can override whatever laws you want, and also that we're supposed to give the government complete carte blanche when it comes to their wars. But if it comes to, you know, protecting a city like New Orleans or protecting our national heritage or our education or something like that, then the government plays no role. So I think they could put about anybody they want in that suit, in the George Bush suit, and still we can go down the same path if we don't start changing our ideology.
I think you're exactly right. You are exactly right. Bush has been an easy target, and that's why it's so easy to talk about him. But you're spot on with that, Greg. You really are.
I remember when I was, you know, when I was in junior high school, I had this teacher which I really loved, and it turned out she was a Republican. But back then, you know, it was a little bit different. You would disagree with what somebody had to say, but it wasn't now like it is about people actively trying to destroy our society. You know, and this woman, she was a Republican, but she was very active in Sierra Club, was dedicated to the environment and everything else. So I think the rules have really changed. And if you're a Republican today, I think you have to look in the mirror and say, does this really stand for what I stand for?
Oh, absolutely. I know a lot of people that, you know, I'll have a discussion with somebody and they'll say they're a Republican, and so you'll get into talking with them, and you find out they're not really very Republican at all. They may be fiscally conservative, but But socially, they're not. They're not again. They're not for the war. I've talked to many people in the past few months that they claim to be Republicans, but I argue with them that they're really not. That they're more in the middle or more liberal than they are conservatives.
Well, if you press people on certain issues, I remember a summer or two ago I took this cruise, and it took about 3 days for the boat to be completely divided between Democrats and Republicans. Well, one day I was sitting with this Republican man, and he says, you know, I don't believe in providing health care to poor people. So I said, okay, sir, see that waitress over there? Now, let's say she gets a brain tumor, okay? So what you're saying is that she should die like a dog, or she should watch while her child dies because she can't afford to pay for the medical coverage. Oh, I'm not saying that. I said, oh, no, that's exactly what you're saying, you know? And when it comes down to these issues, people just don't want to look at the reality of the situation. It's all these slogans and these, you know, bumper sticker things, but people don't want to look at the reality of what's behind it.
Oh, you'll have to admit, Greg, they've been brainwashed oh so well by the slogans that you mentioned. It started off with Reagan, really. You know, the welfare mothers and welfare queens and so many fallacies that came up. But those slogans are, you know, just the other day I had a discussion with a guy. You know, well, I'm a Republican. I'm for smaller government. You're what? You know, And you mentioned the war. You know, we're hearing the Republicans all the time now talk about, well, you shouldn't attack a president during a time of war. Are we at war? Has someone declared war?
No.
No, nobody has.
And they certainly had no problem attacking Clinton when we were talking about going into Kosovo and everything else. The difference is when we went into Kosovo, we did not lose one American soldier, and we had an exit plan. But still, they had no problem criticizing him. And remember the Clinton scandals today? I'm not talking about Lewinsky, but haircut gate and all that other stuff. I mean, that seems so trivial in comparison to the things that happen now. It's not funny.
Oh, you bet. And you're right about criticizing him during that time. I remember statements by Trent Lott. I remember Orrin Hatch. Many of them. Tom DeLay. They criticized Clinton, but now that Bush is being criticized over his declaration of whatever this is, this conflict, but we really shouldn't call it. It's not been declared a war by the Congress of the United States.
Well, they just play with the nomenclature because that way, you know, he can do whatever he wants. If it's a war on terror, he can imprison people indefinitely. He can do whatever he likes, you know, without calling it a war, you know. So that means it can go on forever and ever without ever having to give it a name.
That's right. That's right. Hey, Greg, thanks so much for calling.
Thanks a lot, Greg.
Glad to have you along with us this afternoon.
Thanks.
Well, we'll be taking cold calls here today since we don't have we've got the machine answering today, so. Who do we have here?
Hello.
Hello.
This is Juanita.
Hello, Juanita. How are you today?
I'm fine. How are you?
You're the first one to be picked up by the automatic phone system that you put in.
Worked pretty good.
You're number one.
Great. A couple of things. You were talking about him lying to get us into the war. It really doesn't surprise me because back when the first war over there, Desert Storm.
Right.
Remember how they had the young girl weeping and telling about how they were going in and turning over the babies and all?
Oh, the Kuwaiti.
That was just a phony baloney.
Yeah, they were children of high officials in Kuwait.
Yeah. And it wasn't true at all. So I just have never trusted anything he has said. I mean, and he's proved that I was right. I mean, there's something about him. I just don't trust him at all in anything he says. And you notice they're using some of the same things about Iran that they did. You know, oh, they're going to blow us up, you know.
Right, right.
But one thing, another thing you were talking about, the thing about Oliver North, I'm the one that called about that, I think. And I had got this from my right-wing cousins, you know, that in – this was being passed around in the churches.
Oh, yeah.
And the thing is, they will pass stuff around on and on and on, and it doesn't matter whether it's true or false.
Right.
And one thing they still sometimes pass around is about Madeleine Murray O'Hare trying to get rid of all religious broadcasting. And the woman's been dead for how long? I mean, she was murdered.
That's right.
You know, and so that's what it is. And so that's why I looked it up, you know, and saw that it wasn't the name, and then it wasn't Al Gore. Al Gore wasn't there at all.
No.
They were saying, oh, it was Al Gore questioning him.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
He
wasn't even on that committee.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
But this goes around, and the people believe it because the church is telling them.
Right, right.
So that, but there's one thing that happened during Desert Storm that I will never talk about because I don't want to get anybody in trouble, but it hangs around in my memory of something that they were ordered to do when they were over there, and I have every reason to believe them, and it's just terrible.
Well, I'm afraid awful things happen in every war, and we're not.
You know that, like, now they're saying about that our torture is not as bad as some other people's torture. You know, I mean, how can we approve of all of that? I know it goes on, but I mean, why should we approve of it and let our officials approve of it?
Breaks my heart that anybody in America has ever been accused of that.
Right,
it's just something we don't want done in our name, that's for sure.
Right, that's what angers me.
Right, right.
But anyway, God bless you, Mon, and I'm glad you're back on.
Thanks, Juanita. Thanks for calling today.
Okay. Bye-bye.
866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. You can give us a call. It's toll-free. It's on our nickel. Don't forget that. And we're going to come right back after this.
We're not going to play around. We do have your phone. And if you say anything untoward, obscene, or anything like that, we'll contact your local authorities, and you will be held accountable.
Why, you ill-mannered sack of crap!
Tell us what you think. Call Guy James now. 1-866-546-5254.
Oh, yeah, you better give us a call now. You sack of crap. I don't know. That's a pretty good definition of Roddy, don't you think? Man, oh, man, is that guy, he's off the charts sometimes, that's for sure. Looking at the news today, there's not so many happy things on here. You know, I picked up a news story a little while ago. Two car bombs exploded in Baghdad today, killing a bystander, wounding half a dozen others. Looking through the rest of this, gunman shot down six people, including a child, in a market area of the southern city of Basra. Basra is a place the British supposedly had control of. It's not looking so good now. Monday, U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and British Foreign Secretary Jack Straw urged Iraqi leaders to form a government as soon as possible to curb the bloodshed and rein in sectarian militias behind much of the violence. I thought they had their election and they were forming a government. Violence between Shiite and Sunni Muslims has escalated since the February 22nd bombing of an important Shiite shrine in Samarra. And in Baghdad's Dora district, four gunmen charged into a Shiite home late Sunday, lined up a brother, two sisters, and an uncle against a wall and shot him dead. And the father of the family, who was a grocery store shop owner, had been killed 6 months earlier by a gunman in the same neighborhood, one of Baghdad's most dangerous neighborhoods. The mother was visiting relatives when this attack occurred on Sunday. The victims of the drive-by shooters in Basra included a Navy officer, two policemen, two workers at an electrical plant, and a boy. Basra, by the way, is Iraq's second largest city. Car bombings happened early Monday, one in eastern Baghdad, Sadr City slum, and the other in central district of Qarada, both mostly Shiite areas. The Sadr City explosion killed at least one civilian and wounded four others, and two were wounded in Qarada. The targets were not known, police said. You know, why do I bring this up? This is just another example of not wanting to face the truth. You know, I mentioned all this that happened, all this violence that happened today and yesterday, but not to worry. Not to worry. Mr. Bush has told us there is no civil war going on over there. There's no civil war at all. They're dying by the scores, but there's no civil war. You have to wonder. And somebody sent me this little story here today. I thought you might be interested in. Kind of off the subject of politics, but maybe not. Guess what? Walmart is no longer number one on the Fortune 500 list. No, they've been propelled. They've been replaced by ExxonMobil. Walmart dropped to number two. ExxonMobil raked in $340 billion, a 25.5% increase over 2004 last year, and had $36.1 billion in profit, the most by any company in United States history. Back in 2001, mobile was number one, and this list has been in existence now for, 51 years, and the only people to ever be on top of it, the only companies ever to be on top of it, were Walmart, ExxonMobil, and General Motors. Man, oh man, isn't General Motors worried about taking a fall? They're worried that if Delphi is not able to supply them, they might go bankrupt. General Motors going bankrupt. I forget the politician that said it. I know it was during the Eisenhower administration. That as General Motors goes, so goes America. You know, that might be true. That might be true. General Motors has gone broke, and America's gone broke along with them. Walmart was second with $315 billion, is second place, but you know, the oil companies filling in the other spots at number four, Chevron, and Conoco is number seven. But those $70 barrel gas prices, and I guess it's inching back up toward that again, and the gasoline. What are you paying for gasoline in your area, I wonder? I think here today it was around $2.66 for regular gas, around $2.66, somewhere in that neighborhood. I'd like to hear what you're paying. Let's go to the phones right now. Who do we have?
Oh, I was going to ask your producer something. He's been replaced by a robot, huh?
Well, not replaced. He just couldn't be here today. So
okay.
We've got the robot on duty.
Well, you know, the question I wanted to ask is last week you said if any of us had recommendations for who would be a good guest on the subject of the voting fraud, and I had emailed you a couple, and I didn't know if you got them.
Yes, we did.
We're
going to have a show on that later on this week if we can get everybody in line that we want.
I strongly recommend the two that I sent you. They're both very knowledgeable on it.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what we can arrange, Dave. This is our Dave calling from Eureka, California.
That is the very Dave. I wish I'd have thought out of a subject to talk with you about. I was just going to ask your producer, though, if you should receive the email.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got him. I actually look through all the email every day. Takes a little time nowadays. And
well, not all of mine gets delivered. A lot of mine, it doesn't display as sound, and there's somebody between me and where it's going.
Well, that happens nowadays, and you have to wonder. You do have to wonder. I know I do. Something is controversial going around, and you wonder if all your mail's getting through. I hate to think like that, but kind of the way it is.
It's happening, believe me.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I should have thought of something to share with the world, but I didn't.
Well,
anyway,
Dave,
I love your program.
Hey,
guys.
Dave, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you.
Bye-bye.
Well, let's see. Let's push this button over here. There we go. We got that all settled. Hey, what did you think of John McCain's performance yesterday with Timmy Russert? I'm so happy that the public, at least I hope a lot of them are watching, and they do watch that program. They finally got to see the real John McCain this past week. The entire nation should know now that he's a phony, and he's a phony of the highest order. You know, Bush knifed him in the back during his presidential bid. He played the dirtiest kind of politics against him. And now, in order to hold on to Bush's base, McCain panders to him, and he's all buddy-buddy with Bush. And he's always had contempt for the fundies, and now he's buddy-buddy with Jerry Falwell. He always claimed to be a centrist, and now he reaches out to the far extreme right. You know, remember, this is the same John McCain many Democrats felt wouldn't have any trouble at all winning the Republican nomination and the presidency because he was so middle of the road. Do you still think that after showing yesterday that he'll sell out with his self-respect in order to retain Bush's radical right-wing base? Do you think you still think he's an honorable man? Not me. I've been losing respect for him all along, but yesterday that was the end of it. That was the end of any respect I had for him. I honor his war record and all, but his time as a politician now, he's a sellout. Think about that. If he'll sell out now just to gain the office, he'll sell us out later on. He is, after all of his attempts to look like the good guy, just another garden variety politician willing to sell his honor to the highest bidder. That's all you can say about it. I've got some... I got some audio here. Let's go to that cut of McCain doing the dance here.
In regards to Reverend Falwell, which is the major thrust of your comments, I met with Reverend Falwell. He came to see me in Washington. We agreed to disagree on certain issues, and we agreed to move forward. I believe that speaking at Liberty University is no different from speaking at the New College or Ohio State University, all of which...
Whoa, just a minute, John McCain. Speaking at Liberty University is no different than speaking at Ohio State University? Hey, you're talking about my school now, and I'm sorry that they invited you to speak, but... Speaking at Liberty is the same as speaking at Ohio State University. Au contraire, I don't think so. And I'm not talking about the size of the university or the stature of the university necessarily, but he's in the backyard of Jerry Falwell, well, the chancellor of that university, and you know how that university is tilted. He's McCain is out there pandering for their vote, plain and simple. Let's go on with this.
Which I'm speaking.
But, Senator, when you were on here in 2000, I asked you about Jerry Falwell, and this is what you said.
Governor Bush swung far to the right and sought out the base support of Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell. Those aren't the ideas that I think are good for the Republican Party.
Do you think that Jerry Falwell's ideas are now good for the Republican Party?
I believe that the Christian right has a major role to play in the Republican Party. One reason is because they're so active and their followers are. And I believe they have a right to be a part of our party. I don't have to agree with everything they stand for, nor do I have to agree with everything that's on the liberal side. of the Republican Party. If we have to agree on every issue, we're not a Republican Party. I believe in open and honest debate. Was I unhappy in the year 2000 that I lost the primary and there were some attacks on me that I thought was unfair? Of course. Should I get over it? Should I serve? Can I serve the people of Arizona best by looking back in anger or moving forward?
Do you believe that Jerry Falwell is still an agent of intolerance?
No, I don't. I think that Jerry Falwell can explain to you his views on this program when you have him on.
Now, John McCain was as clear-cut as anybody could possibly be as to what he thought about Jerry Falwell earlier on. And now he's kissing up to Jerry Falwell. Tell you, anybody that kisses up to Jerry Falwell, oh my God. You know, McCain is just another one, another Republican who's abdicating his responsibility to the country and to the Constitution and to the past generations of American who fought, including himself, who fought to ensure that we remained a republic and not some kind of a monarchy or a dictatorship, which is what Bush would like it to be. Remember that quote, of course. Wouldn't want to be a dictator and a dictatorship unless, of course, I'm the dictator. And I go back to an old quote by Ben Franklin. You know, he was a wily old coot from everything we've read about him. And he's reputed to have said in 1787 to a woman who asked him what the Constitutional Convention had created. And he said, "A republic, madam, if you can keep it." Well, are we keeping it? Is the Republican Party and the Bush administration now, are they letting us keep this republic? You know, we Democrats usually talk about having a democracy, and the Republicans go, "Oh, no, this is a republic." Well, have we kept it as a republic? You know, the basic mechanism of the Constitution assumes that each branch of government will do its duty to itself and to the system. It assumes that if the executive becomes too powerful, which is where Bush and Cheney and them want to go right now, Congress and to a lesser extent the courts are going to step in and rein that in. And if you go back and read, the writings of Madison, you only have to read a few lines of Madison to know this. Hell, Scalia's got to know it. Wouldn't you have to know that if you were on the Supreme Court? He has to know it. Although his version of, quote, originalism really denies it. The Republicans are, therefore, in their defiance of the law and their ability to keep Bush off the hot seat of impeachment or censure, they're putting loyalty to a tyrant above their loyalty and obligations to this nation. The Republicans are, then, the ones that do this. They are, therefore, traitors by the very definition of the word. The very definition. Don't know how they could go along with this with a straight face. I really don't. Going on to talk a little bit more about Mr. Bush's friends. Oh, hey, I wanted to tell you, I know a lot of you heard this today. How would you like to have been in the Capitol building this afternoon, just afternoon today, and the power went off? And I guess there's about 100 people setting up the gallery of the House, and the power went off, and it was dark. Ooh. How'd you like to be in the Capitol building in the nation's capital and the power goes off? Can you imagine what'd go through your head right then? I know what would be going through my head. Who's hitting us now? And fortunately, it wasn't a big deal, but they got it straightened out pretty quickly. But man, that had to be absolutely frightening for some of those people. Just absolutely frightening. Do want to remind everybody listening that we're going to have Marcy Winograd, who's the she's the president of Progressive Democrats of Los Angeles, and she's taking on Jane Harmon in the 36th District Democratic primary coming up very shortly. And we're going to have her on a little later on to explain to us why she's running in that election. Very, very interesting, I'm sure. Do you sit around and ponder a lot of this stuff like I do, that the Bush administration, how far off course they really are, and how far away from what America really wants that they really are. The sad part about all this is the media and the right-wing media, which is in control of the media, really makes it sound like this is just a little lull in his popularity. That Mr. Bush is really a great man, has just got caught up in a few little problems, and the problems aren't of his making, of course. They're all someone else. You know, I know someone, and maybe you people know someone like the guy I'm about to talk about, but I know someone who's been an alcoholic most of his adult life. He won't admit it to anyone, although I often wonder if he's ever admitted it to himself or even thinks like that, because he's the kind of guy that goes through a 12-pack every day, and plus a few drinks at night, and wherever he goes out to dinner, he always has two or three drinks. He's an alcoholic. There isn't any question about it. Goes over the line quite often. You know, I'm always hearing him talk about what he's going to do in the future. I'm going to start making a better living. I'm going to quit drinking soon. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that. It's tiresome, really, because all of us that know him have listened to him for years boast about what he's going to do in the future. And that wouldn't be so bad. It's great to plan for the future, but he never does any of it. He never has. I doubt he ever will. He seems to be all talk all the time. And I know a lot of you know someone like that. And when he isn't talking about what he's going to do, he starts bragging to everybody about what he has done in the past. It's a past I'm unfamiliar with, because I don't know of him doing anything of note ever. He's a selfish man. He lives for the future, which never comes, and for the past that never was. The point is, never does he live in the now. And that's true with alcoholics in many cases. And so it is with George Bush. And think about this. He talks endlessly about the bright future that he's got planned. Just go back and look at his speeches. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. It's going to be all right. You know, his war in Iraq is going to somehow turn into a splendid victory for democracy. And that democracy is gradually going to infect the rest of the Middle East. And they'll all see the light and make peace with the rest of the world. And everything will be just fine. Right? The economy's going to recover from its present-day doldrums, and Americans are going to, well, they're going to experience prosperity like never before someday. And just last week, you know, he said future presidents will bring our troops home from Iraq. The make-believe future world he's living in gives him comfort. It does. It makes him believe that future history books will have his presidency listed right up there with Washington, Lincoln, and Roosevelt. He really believes that, I think. And then there's his past. No, not the past that he's conned people into believing, but his real past, his real, genuine past, the real past of the real George W. Bush, the real past that he chooses not to revisit. Again, the traits of an alcoholic that doesn't want to go over and look back at his past. George's real past is something Bush Jr. would rather not talk about. And he doesn't. His treacherous lies, which took us to war, his drunkenness, his lies about his military service, his almost unbelievable string of failed business ventures, which lost millions of dollars of his friends' money, but never any of his own. So Georgie boy doesn't talk about his real past at all. You won't corner him with questions about the past, because he'll just use his tired old worn out phrases like, and I know you've heard him say it over and over again, we all have, I don't believe in looking backward, I look to the future, or we're not going to go over that again. Cheney's particularly enamored of that statement, or my favorite, we've already addressed that. Think how many times you've heard this administration say that. You know, after all, if Bush looked back, he would have to take personal responsibility for a train carload of terrible mistakes. He'd have to admit to the public and to himself, that he's been a gigantic failure. Oh, sure. A lot of people might not look at it that way because he's been governor of Texas and he's occupied the Oval Office for 5 years. But in both of those endeavors, he has totally failed. The record's there for anybody to see that he led Texas down the road to economic disaster, and he's now done the same damn thing for the entire country. We knew he would. And he knows that the people who were suckered into putting him in office won't look back either. That means they too would have to accept personal responsibility. And if there is anything, if there's anything at all, this Republican Party, the self-proclaimed party of personal responsibility, if there's anything this party won't do, is accept personal responsibility. That's for someone else to do, not them. Think of all the Republicans you know that have bought the line, hook, line, and sinker. Think of all the average Joe Republicans you know have not quite made it. And who do they blame? They blame the welfare queens. They all given all the foreign aid, given all the welfare money, the ADC money. They blame it on somebody else, just like the Republicans have taught them to do. And yet they're the party of personal responsibility. You see, the hardcore members of the neocon movement, the modern-day Republicans who backed George Bush, they've listened to the likes of Limbaugh and Hannity and O'Reilly and Laura Ingraham and a plethora of others. They've let them educate them on personal responsibility until they believe that they owned that subject. They've used it as a hammer, the party of personal responsibility, keeping in mind, if you will, that two of the most vehement right-wing party line towers have been Limbaugh and O'Reilly, and we know for a fact that neither of them has admitted personal responsibility in their own personal lives, but rather blamed their problems on someone else. It was much easier and more expedient to do that. In Limbaugh's case, he blamed the whole thing on his maid. And I'm talking about slugging down thousands of illegal pills. Wasn't his fault, it was the maid's fault. Yeah. And Mr. No Spin O'Reilly blamed his problem, and you all know about that, Mr. Falafel, blamed his problem on the press. In fact, he blamed it on all the media, the print press, the news press. He blamed it on, and he blamed it on Democrats. He blamed it on those who were jealous of him. He blamed it on the woman that he offended and eventually paid off to keep her silence. And I think he might even have blamed Mother Teresa and the Easter Bunny, too. I'm not sure. But he sure blamed everybody he could. You know, the cold hard fact is the party of personal responsibility believes in your personal responsibility, not theirs. When I think about it, this Bush team reminds me of an old, out-of-date Wurlitzer jukebox sitting in the middle of the room. Remember those? Big old gaudy looking things. Lights and chrome and everything all over the place. Broken, outdated, obsolete, gaudy, and worthless. And everybody wonders what to do with it. But the real answer is to load it up and haul it away to the refuse dump of history the people intoxicated with its former glory would like to forget. The only thing is, Bush will never be forgotten the same way Warren Harding and Herbert Hoover will never be forgotten. That's going to be his legacy. That's right. George Bush is going to join Warren Harding, Warren Gamille Harding, and Herbert Hoover as the triad, as the three lousiest presidents there ever were. And of course, George will be sitting on the throne as king of them, and the other two will just be princes. Because you got to admit by now, everything he touched has turned to crap. Absolutely, it has turned to crap. I wanted to mention, one of my right-wing friends is always writing me and calling me a liberal. Yeah, he acts like that's a dirty word. And I think some Democrats are guilty of letting it become a dirty word because the Republicans have said it was. But I like to look back, and I think it'd be a good time to look back at one of my favorites, John F. Kennedy, and a quote of his. What do our opponents mean when they apply to us the label liberal? If by liberal they mean, as they want people to believe, someone who is soft on his policies abroad, who is against local government, and who is unconcerned with the taxpayers' dollar, then the record of this party and its members demonstrate we are not that kind of liberal. But if by a liberal they mean someone who looks ahead and not behind, someone who welcomes new ideas without rigid reaction, someone who cares about the welfare of the people, their health, their housing, their schools, their jobs, their civil rights, and their civil liberties, someone who believes we can break through the stalemate and suspicions that grip us in our policies abroad. If that is what they say they mean by a liberal, then I'm proud to say I'm a liberal. Great speech by John F. Kennedy. Well, it's coming up on the top of the hour. We're going to take a little break, and we're going to come back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go anywhere.
my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Guy James back with you. Glad to be here. My goodness, we're steering the ship all by ourselves today in our modern new studio. We're awfully proud of our new studio. We're going to get some pictures up on the internet of it very shortly. We'd like to thank Bob Kincaid for his help in his very good instructions and guidance on electronics in this beautiful new studio of ours. And, of course, Bob Ladd, our engineer, who did a great job helping to set it all. Even myself did a little bit of the wiring. And it's a gorgeous room. It really is. And we'll get some pictures up soon. Several of you have asked about it. It's, well, let me describe it. It's a shade of tangerine. Yeah, that's right. Tangerine on the walls with purple soundproofing. Yes, with the latest in high-tech soundproofing on it. And it's nice looking. So we'll get it up there. And I do want to thank everybody helping that helped do this. We're very, very grateful to the whole staff that helped put this whole thing together here at the TIB Broadcasting Tower up here in the third floor. Had a chance to go down to the cafeteria a few minutes ago and got a small cafeteria down there. Went down and got a little something, a little refreshment. Boy, it's one of those days where an ice cold one sounds good. Really does sound good. Of course, we wouldn't do that while we're doing the show, but it does sound good. It sounds very good. Hello to everybody listening, all of our friends at the Democratic Underground. My goodness, the folks at Democratic Underground have been faithful listeners over the years to the show. So very many of them over the years, and both listening and contributing to the program. And while I'm speaking of that, I do want to remind everybody that the Guy James Show is listener supported. You haven't heard any commercials on here, have you? No. And so you might have guessed, and you were right if you guessed, it is listener supported. So if you'll go to our site and hit the old PayPal button, why, we'd be ever so grateful for you to help taking care of keeping this on the air. Trying to see who sent me this. Allie Knowlton. Allie, we appreciate what you sent us here. She sent us some great jokes, and we always try and have a joke every day. So, okay, we'll do this one every day. You know, and I'm amazed. Some of you have written in and says, "Oh, we love the joke." So you can thank Allie Knowlton for this one. Allie, thanks so very much. She sent me a whole list of them. George Bush was out jogging one morning along the parkway when he tripped and fell over a bridge railing and landed in the creek below. Before the Secret Service guys could get to him, three kids who were fishing pulled him out of the water. And he was so grateful that he offered the kids whatever they want. The first kid said, "I sure would like to go to Disneyland." George said, "No problem, I'll take you there on Air Force One." The second kid said, "I really need a new pair of Nike Air Jordans." George said, "I'll get them for you, and I'll even have Michael sign them." And the third kid said, "I want a motorized wheelchair with a built-in TV and stereo headset." George is a little perplexed by this and says, "But you don't look like you're handicapped." The kid says, "I will be after my dad finds out I saved your ass from drowning." Kaboom. If we had the drums and the cymbal there, that's what we do. So, a cute one. I swore I was going to talk about this today, and I didn't know if I'd get around to it or not. And I do want to remind you that Marcy Winograd is going to be up with us around 4:30. In fact, exactly at 4:30, I think. We'll try and keep that as exact as possible. and I probably make some people mad when I mention a couple of names and people I'm talking about, but I wonder if you've noticed that there are a tremendous number of Democrats who are total hypocrites concerning the war. And I know a lot of you agree with me on this because we've written back and forth. You send me email, and believe me, I know, and I hope the powers that be within the party are getting to know that there are very many of us out here who are very, very dissatisfied with the DNC and what they're doing. Not Howard so much. Howard, I think, is out there doing a good job. But the Democrat powers that be inside the Beltway like to throw their weight around and think they own the party. But there's a lot of hypocrites concerning the war, Democrat hypocrites. You know, you take Jack Murtha, for example. I like Jack, and I like the fact that he's now speaking out against Bush's war. I say Bush's war because that's what it ought to be called. It shouldn't be, the war in Iraq. It should be George Bush's war in Iraq. Because we now know that him and Tony Blair, they started it on their own. But back to Jack Murtha. Better late than never. However, I'd like to ask the question of Congressman Murtha. And I think it's an important question. At what point did this war become bad? At what point did this war become bad? I'd like to ask the same question of all of the Democrats who voted for the war. At what point did this war become bad? I'll say now, and I've said from day one, that the war is bad, was bad, and will forever be bad. It didn't become bad when we crossed the threshold of 1,000 dead Americans. It didn't become bad when we spent 10 times over what it was predicted to cost. It didn't become bad when the sentiments of the American public soured on it. No, sir. It was bad from the beginning. It was bad from the moment the first bomb was dropped and the first shots were fired. It was bad when it was only Bush's pipe dream for him and his PNAC buddies. No, sir. The cold, hard facts are that if the American military had gone into Iraq and killed Saddam Hussein, cleaned out the remnants of the Ba'athist Party and restored order, if all of that had happened quickly, then the American public would have, by and large, the American public would have said, "Yahoo, we're winners. This was a great war, and we're the conquering heroes." All those people that had the flags flying all over their cars, you can hear it now. We won, we won, we won. We're the mightiest power on earth, and we vanquished another enemy. We won, we won. God bless America, we won. Make no mistake about it, that is exactly what would have happened. And I'm not going to let people forget about that. Many, if not most, of the present naysayers on the right would have been shouting from the highest mountaintop, "We won." Because to those people, winning was all this was ever about. It was never about the loss of American lives. It was never about the senseless massacre of tens of thousands of innocent Iraqi men, women, and children. It was all about flexing American military muscle and winning. Winning. We are living in a militaristic, jingoistic society that's being brainwashed by the right-wing controlled media. That's not news. Brainwashed to accept the imperialistic nature of our present-day government. Brainwashed into thinking that the war is the way to solve all of our problems. So now that the tide has turned against Bush's war, and that war has turned into a boiling cauldron of defeat and destruction, those people's attitudes are changing. They're saying the war is becoming bad. The cold, hard fact is that it was bad all along. There was never any justification for it. There was never evidence which would cause a good leader and an honest leader to take this country into that war. Never. So let's not hear now from those who backed it completely that it's bad now. That just makes them look foolish or bloodthirsty or maybe both. How many people do you know at the highest levels of our government, the Congress and Senate, oh, they were behind this 100%. And I got so damn tired of driving down the road and seeing all the cars bedecked with flags. I love our flag as much as anybody else. But if you didn't have one of those little ribbons on your car, or a half dozen of those little ribbons, support our troops, and flags flying from there. Remember all those little flags with the little things you put inside your window and the flags were flying? You remember that? Oh, you weren't a good American unless you had those flying. Because you had to support this war. You remember the Republicans, the congressmen all getting up and talking about what traitors and what anti-American sentiments that anybody spoke that spoke out about it? They were anti-American, un-American. Do you remember that? I sure do. Where's all that talk now? Where is it? Those people have crawled back in their holes. Here you have Bush and Cheney still out supporting their decision to go to war. You got Cheney even making light of it sometimes. I just hate it. I really do. I'm not one of these people that's a peacenik against all wars. There's sometimes I think it's probably necessary. But this was not necessary. But now a lot of people come crawling out of the woodwork. Say, well, you know, this war is getting bad now. It's not what we thought it would be. Hell no, it's not what you thought it would be. You were brainwashed into thinking it was going to be soldiers coming home marching in ticker tape parades in Times Square, right? That's what you were led to believe. That all of our boys and girls were going to come home as conquering heroes. You didn't expect 2,300 or 2,400 body bags to come home, did you? You didn't expect all those body bags, those caskets to come back to Dover, Delaware, being covered with flags. And our government, our Bush administration, not even allowing the public to see them. Why didn't they want the public to see? Can you imagine a worse insult? Can you imagine a worse insult than to die in the service of your country's military, to give your life for that? To sign up for an army, you volunteered, and you give your life in the service of your country's military at the order of your president, and that SOB president will not allow the public to see your casket come home with a flag on it. Can you imagine a worse insult than that? I cannot. It's a disgrace. It's a disgrace that every one of those caskets that came home with a flag on it hasn't been paraded in front of the cameras. Every one of them. Every one of them should be shown, and every one of the grieving families should be shown if they wish. To let this country know that this isn't some Mr. Clean military operation going over, this is it's a disaster. A disaster that's got over 2,000 of our young men and women, some of our finest, killed. I think in a lot of people's mind it wasn't so bad when they thought this was some glorious war that they were marching off to. And the parents and the relatives and the families, I feel so bad for them. And we see them on TV. We see some of them who are in support of Mr. Bush, families of soldiers that have been killed in support of Mr. Bush. That's their right. But how would you feel if you had one of your youngsters killed Would you want to believe it was for nothing? Don't think anybody'd want to believe it was for nothing. Let's go to the phones. Who do we have? Hello. Well, I need to hit the right button. Hey, how are you today? Hello.
Hello, this is Alice.
Hello, how are you today?
Okay.
What's on your mind today, Alice?
Oh, Guy?
Yes.
Well, I lived through Harding and Hoover, and by the standards of George Bush, they were pretty good presidents. Bush is in a class all his own.
I think you're right.
And it was a bad war from when they first thought of it. Well,
I'm from an area not far from the birthplace of Warren G. Harding, so I know a lot about Warren G. Harding. And growing up and in my young adulthood, I would never have dreamed that we'd ever be a president in our lifetime again that would approach being as bad as Warren G. Harding was, but here we have one that's past him.
Oh, yeah, we've got... oh, he's the worst possible.
Yeah,
I'm afraid.
It's amazing. It's up in Ohio, there are two schools, and I'm sure there's some across the country, too, but there's two schools in Ohio called Warren G. Harding High School. And now one of them is in the town, you know, by his birthplace. So maybe they had an excuse. I often wondered, what was the excuse of the other school that named after Warren G. Harding? I think they were maybe they did that in haste before they found out just what kind of a character Warren G. Harding was.
Yeah. I went to Woodrow Wilson.
Woodrow Wilson. Okay.
Woodrow Wilson School. That was the first one.
My goodness, yeah. Woodrow Wilson's high school. I was in the National Cathedral not long ago, and I don't know if a lot of people know that, but that's where Woodrow Wilson is interred, is inside the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. He has a crypt there, Woodrow Wilson does. So if you are ever in Washington, D.C., and you're looking for the grave of Woodrow Wilson, why, you'll have to go to the National Cathedral, a magnificent structure, by the way. Have you ever been there, Alice?
No. Fargo, North Dakota, and I guess in around Chicago, and that was the furthest east I went.
All right.
All around here, though.
Yeah. Well, the Far West is a beautiful place. I've been fortunate enough to have traveled extensively throughout the Far West in this country, you know, I have a funny story to tell. I lived in Ohio for many years, and they talk about Ohio being the Midwest, you know. And so I was on a motorcycle trip one time, and I was standing out in just outside of Salt Lake City, Utah. I stopped my motorcycle, and I saw the beautiful Wasatch Mountain Range, and they were snow-covered. And so I just thought I'd get off and take a picture. And I had my 35-millimeter camera and climbed off my bike and parked it up the road. And I went down and took a picture of the Wasatch Mountains, which I still love that picture. It's a beautiful mountain range. And met up with this gentleman from the area there, of the beautiful Salt Lake City area. And he says, I see from the license plate on your motorcycle that you're from Ohio. And I mistakenly said... fell right into his trap. I said, yes, I'm from the Midwest. And he looked at me, and he laughed, and he said, the Midwest? Ohio? I said, well, that's what it's called. And he said, well, now listen. He said, wouldn't you agree that the Mississippi River kind of pretty well cuts the America in two parts, east and west? And I go, yeah. And so everything east of the Mississippi is the east, and everything west is the west. He said, Utah is the Midwest. And I thought, well, you got me there. I'd say he was right.
But, yeah.
It's a beautiful country out there, and I love California, and I love Utah is a spectacular place, a lot of it.
I took my nurse's training in Port Angeles, Washington. That's beautiful there.
Oh, yes.
Right across from Victoria.
Oh, yes. Yes, I went and took a motorcycle trip to Alaska, and I took a freighter on the Inside Passage coming back down through Ketchikan, Alaska, and to, you know, Victoria, and my, oh, my, what a spectacular area of the country that is up and through there. Just
oh,
wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Alice, good to hear from you today.
Yeah, good to hear your voice, too.
Thanks. Well, we'll try and be here every day, Monday through Friday from now on.
Yeah.
Thanks, Alice, for calling.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. Bye. Yeah, it is pretty territory out there. I encourage all of you, if you get a chance to get out and take a look at that pretty country out there. Traveling's kind of expensive right now, gas being what it is. I wonder how much that's going to hurt things when summer comes again, the price being, gas being so high. A lot of families don't get to travel like they used to, and it's a doggone shame. I was fortunate enough to be in a family where my father thought seeing the country was very important, and I most definitely agree with that. It is important that families get out and see the country. Very important, and I'm fortunate enough to have done that. We got just a few minutes coming up until we have our interview with Marcy Winograd, and she's running for the 36th District House of Representatives seat in California. And let me give you just a little background. We'll be taking a break, and we'll come to her after the break. But she's president of the Progressive Democrats of Los Angeles. Press release on her says she's taken on the Goliath of corporate politics, California's 36th District Congresswoman Jane Harman, the House Intelligence Committee's ranking Democrat who kept mum for over a year about Bush's illegal wiretapping. Yes, it's Marcy versus Harman, Bush and Cheney, David versus Goliath. And I know it makes a lot of the entrenched Democrats mad, some of the party people. It makes them angry that anybody would have the audacity to run against an incumbent Democrat. But damn it, if we elect a Democrat to office and that Democrat is not carrying out our wishes, we need to run somebody who can. We need some purity in the Democratic Party. We need pure Democratic thinking. I can't remember who it was. I think it was Harry Truman. Said if given the choice between a Republican and a Democrat who acts like a Republican, they'll vote for the Republican every time. And we need good Democrats that stand on the principles of the Democratic Party. That's what we need. We don't need Bush appeasers in office. And I encourage you, no matter where they are, I know Lieberman's got a fight on his hands. My God, I hope that that the primary candidate up there can take that seat, that Senate seat away from Joe Lieberman. That would thrill me to no end. It really, really would. Love to see that. Hey, we're going to take a break, and while we're gone, we're going to get a hold of our guest, and we'll be right back. We'll be right back.
fact, my administration looked at the intelligence, and we saw a threat. Members of Congress looked at the intelligence, and they saw a threat. The United Nations Security Council looked at the intelligence, and it saw a threat.
Very funny.
Tell us what you think. Call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
Hey, thanks for being along with us this afternoon. It is now my pleasure to introduce you to someone we've talked about all day today, and particularly because of what she is doing and why she's doing it. And, of course, we'll ask her, get that straight from her. Marcy Winograd is running for the 36th District House of Representatives seat, currently occupied by Jean Harmon, the ranking Democrat, on the House Intelligence Committee, and there's going to be a fight for that, and I'm awfully glad to see that there is. So right now, Marcy, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you so much, Guy. It's a great pleasure to be with you today.
Well, we're hearing some great things about you, and one of the subjects of this program for a while now has been the fact that we need to weed out some dead wood out of the Democratic Party. And
yes, I agree.
You're after one of those bushes, and I didn't mean that pun, but one of those weeds that we need to weed out of the Democratic Party. And I'm awfully proud of you for doing that.
Thank you so much, Guy. Yes, I see this as a great people's campaign, a grassroots campaign to reclaim the Democratic Party as the party of the people, not the party of corporate interests, not the party of big defense contractors, and certainly not the party of George Bush.
Well, that's for sure. And I understand that you. When was it? Last night? I got a press release. When did this take place?
Saturday. This is big news, really.
It is big. It's huge news.
Yeah. Well, let's tell everybody. What happened was that there was a vote. The Democratic delegates to the convention, to the state convention, took a vote last Saturday on who they wanted to endorse as the Democratic Party nominee. Now, what typically happens is that an incumbent gets that endorsement. There are no questions asked, really. But this time, we were able to block that endorsement. She only picked up 63% of the vote. Jane Harmon, my opponent, needed 70%. So she walked away from this pre-endorsement convention meeting without an endorsement. She is a six-term incumbent. This is unheard of. It is not the end of the story because there will be another opportunity for her to pick up the endorsement at the California Democratic Party convention later in Sacramento this month. And it will be more challenging for us to block it then because what happens is they purge the delegate pool of many of the grassroots activists. But still, there is a possibility, and we will work to block her nomination.
Well, what happens if you come along and get this nomination? Are these people who are working tooth and nail against you right now, the party officials in California, will they work with you?
No, I don't think they have any interest in working with me. They see this as an insurgent campaign, a threat to the leadership of the party, and in times like these, they tend to close ranks. So it is difficult for me. It would be difficult for me to win the party's nomination because that requires, the endorsement. The nomination is what the people vote on later in the primary. But in the endorsement, that would be difficult because the people voting to a large extent, the ones who will be voting the second time around, are going to be elected officials, peers of Jane Harmon, or appointees of the elected officials. So it's really quite stacked against anyone who wants to challenge the power structure.
Usually a group like that full of people who toe the party line no matter what.
Yeah, that's a lot of what you see. Not totally, but the majority, certainly, overwhelming majority. The delegates, for whatever reason, may feel that it's not right to challenge an existing incumbent Democrat at a time when we need to take back Congress. And my response to that is a primary is a choice. It's not necessarily a fight. It's a choice, that people deserve a choice, that we have a person in office who has boasted repeatedly she's the best Republican the Democrats have ever had and has voted right down the line on war issues for the military, for the Iraq authorization, the blank check for Bush, did not join the 133 members who voted against that, even though she was on the Intelligence Committee at the time and had in her possession a document, the National Intelligence Estimate, which included objections by key members of the intelligence community saying, these stories about weapons of mass destruction, these are dubious, highly dubious. She did not object. She continues to vote for war, for occupation, for the Patriot Act three times, for suspension of due process, lock people up for years, no access to lawyers, no charges, let's put nuclear weapons in space, and on, exempt the military from environmental regulation, against individuals with disabilities, for credit card companies, siding with them against the working poor in terms of voting for the bankruptcy bill, and on. So it's really very much a Republican agenda, and my challenge is, let's put a real Democrat in office. I'm a real Democrat.
Marcy,
for, I stand for the possibility of peace. Yes.
Forgive me for saying this, but all you have just described describes a Republican.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think she would say that she is a very conservative Democrat, and she's, as I mentioned, proud to be considered a Republican by some. At one time, her district was a lot more conservative. So her argument that she was representing the sentiments of the district may have been truer then, but certainly not now. Now it has been redistricted. She almost lost to a Republican several years ago, and they recarved the district to expel the Republican areas. So now you have a 40,000 to 50,000 margin of Democratic voter registration, plus 62,000 declined states that typically vote Democratic.
So it's not necessary to curry the vote of the right wing?
No, not at all.
So you have to wonder why, oh, why.
You know, and also, I mean, people, one of the pieces of disinformation that's been spewing from the opposing campaign is that, well, a Republican could swoop down and spend $5 million, grab the seat, and so forth. This is really ridiculous. No Republican, no Mel Gibson can enter the race at this point. The filing deadline is over. There's only one Republican in the race. I'm not going to say his name because I'm not going to give him any free advertising. But he's a total unknown. There is absolutely no record of him anywhere, except that he is filed.
Well, I want to ask you a question, and don't get mad at me, because I promised my audience that I was going to ask everybody running for office this year.
Okay.
You're running against somebody who is a six-termer. We have railed on this program against some of these long-termers And we want term limits. Let me just put it that way. I think six is enough. Do you have any plans should you get elected? Do you believe in term limits?
You know, I do. I can't give you an exact time limit right now. Six sounds reasonable, six or eight. We need campaign finance reform, certainly, before anything, because without that, it makes it so difficult to run for office. You know? I mean, my opponent has $550,000.
Yeah.
I have invested some of my personal money. We've raised about $20,000 online. WinnerGradForCongress.com, MarcyForCongress.com. But by and large, it just takes a tremendous amount of money to run. So now, for somebody to run for office and then, you know, have to leave after 2, 4, or 6 years, then somebody else has to spend all this money. It's just a big money cycle. So I say let's have campaign finance reform, let's have clean money, matching funds, public financing of elections, and hand-in-hand with that would go term limits.
I'd love to see the private and corporate money, big money, taken out of it altogether. That's something that I'd love to see happen, where you didn't have to spend all your time. You know, I've know some congressmen real well that have talked about, you know, getting sworn in and heading for their office and started their fundraising. That's just how it has to be, and that's... That's not the kind of work I think a congressman ought to have to do day in and day out. I think they should be able to be busy with the things that they're.
I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more.
So if you should win this nomination, and if you should win this election, God willing, if that somehow can happen, and we sure hope it can, what are you going to do different?
Well, when elected, I will vote to cut funding for the Iraq War and bring the troops home. That's a certainty. I will vote to restore civil liberties and gut the Patriot Act. I will vote to redirect much of the money we are spending on useless war and occupation into quality education that promotes critical thinking. I have a new schools initiative that calls for massive funding of early childhood education because that's where you get the most bang for your buck. That's what all the research says can make the biggest difference in terms of closing the achievement gap between the privileged and the poor, those on a college track and those on a fast food track. I would like to see us fund transition teams that are composed of teachers and counselors who move from middle to high school with teenagers so that we don't face this monumental problem of high school dropouts. In Los Angeles, where I'm living, We have a dropout rate of anywhere from 40 to 50% in our high schools. That's highly disturbing. It's either education or incarceration. So it is, for many of our youth, a matter of life and death that we fund education. I also think it's important that we provide corporate tax incentives so that companies will have an incentive to invest in alternative energy. George Bush may pay lip service. He may say, oh, well, yes, we need to develop alternative energy. But are we giving anyone a reason to do this, an economic incentive? We have a lot of corporations that are in the defense industry in my district in El Segundo. Boeing is one of them. Why not give Boeing some tax incentives to transition from a war-based company to a company that could actually provide security that doesn't define itself as bombs and missiles?
Well, let me ask you about one of the political hot potatoes right now. That's going to be interesting for many of us standing on the sidelines to see where the parties go with it. How do you feel about the immigration problem right now? You're in a state, and I'm in a state, where we're affected enormously by the immigration, illegal immigration problem. What do you think?
Well, I would work to repeal NAFTA and the North American Free Trade Agreement. I think if you look at the root causes of the influx of immigration, that's one of them. We have promoted this race to the bottom where corporations can go wherever and mine for the cheapest labor and then not have to worry about paying taxes necessarily on their exports or imports. And what we see is then a diversion of investment in Mexico into China. People are suffering in Mexico. They come here to the United States. So that's one thing that I would work on. And I think it's ridiculous to criminalize immigrants. This is a country founded by immigrants. We welcome immigrants. We have a Statue of Liberty, and yet now we're building all these fences and tunnels and so forth to criminalize people who, by and large, are coming here for noble reasons, to support their family, to support themselves, to have a future. I would like to see a guest worker program where people can earn citizenship over several years. I would like to see a dream program, they call it, whereby students who have been here 5 years or longer can earn citizenship if they are honor students, go to college, and so forth.
What do you think the average Californian, what do the polls say out there? How does the average Californian feel about this right now?
I think the average Californian wants to see immigrants have an opportunity to earn citizenship and doesn't want to see immigrants and or employers sitting in prison facing felony charges because they may have unknowingly hired somebody who was an undocumented worker or they came here because they wanted to support their family.
Yes. You know, you're a lady after my own heart when you mentioned right off that you'd get rid of NAFTA. Amen. A mistake. I mean, it's just a mistake. And why can't the Congress and the Senate of the United States ever admit a mistake? They just won't.
I don't know.
But it was a nasty political mistake. I think it's had disastrous consequences.
Yes.
You're at WinogradForCongress.com. And you're at GoMarcyGo.com. You know what? I've got to admit, I didn't go to either one of your websites. I've grabbed all the press releases I could, and I've talked to publicists and all about you. I'm excited about your candidacy.
Thank you, guys.
Well, we had a similar situation. A friend of mine worked very hard in a candidacy up in Chicago recently, where we fell a little bit short running against an incumbent, mm-hmm. but. I think you've got a good chance at this, and people.
I have an excellent chance. Some people question the viability of a campaign on the part of somebody from the grassroots. I have not held elective office. They asked me, have you ever held elected office? Well, yes, in the sense that I've been elected to the leadership position of various Democratic clubs. I'm the president of Progressive Democrat of Los Angeles. I'm also the co-founder of the California Election Protection Network, and we are deeply immersed in the election protection movement and trying to stop the certification of the electronic voting machines that are highly vulnerable to manipulation. Right now, we're dealing with this new Voter ID Act that has been enacted by our Secretary of State, Bruce McPherson. He entered into an agreement with the federal government to require an exact match so that when you, let's say you move and you re-register, and my name is Marcy Winograd, so I write Marcy Winograd on my voter registration, but my driver's license application says Marcy A. Winograd. Well, when I get to the polls, I may find that I'm told that I'm no longer on the voter rolls. I've been expelled, expurged from the voter rolls, and here I can't even vote a regular ballot in my own race.
Wow.
So this is something that we're very concerned about. It's Florida 2000 all over again when they disenfranchised thousands of African Americans.
Yes, yes. Well, Marcy, we want to wish you the very best in your campaign. We're going to be keeping track of it very, very closely. Perhaps at a later time before the election, we'd like to have you back on again.
Great. I just want to encourage others to run and speak up, and even to ask you, what organization am I in? How do they issue endorsements in political races? How do I get on that endorsement committee? Do the members know the process, and do the members have input? Because that's how really the grassroots can reclaim some of their power.
You bet. Marcy Winograd, thank you so much for being on the program.
Oh, and thank you, Guy.
Great to hear from you. Well, she's a great candidate, and I hope she can pull that off out there. I'm very hopeful that she can. Let's go back to the phones here right now. Who we have on this line? Hello? Hello? You're on the Guy James Show.
Oh, I just wanted to say that I'm a delegate to the state Democratic Convention.
Ah.
And I will be more than happy to let other delegates know that we need to support her, because Jane Harmon is not somebody that I want to the Democratic Party to support at all. And as long as we're going to be voting on endorsements, excuse me, we may as well be voting for the people we actually want in there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Do you think Marcy has a good chance to pull this off?
I'll tell you, there is a very progressive delegation coming from all places, Orange County, that's going to the Democratic Convention. And there are a number of things that we're trying to get done here in Orange County to change it. So this sounds like a great place for us to be putting our muscle.
Oh, yeah. And I think the Harmon campaign went away shocked Saturday, not coming away with the endorsement.
I think that's great. Yeah, I attended an endorsement here in Orange County on Saturday, and every single candidate that we endorsed was a progressive candidate. Mm. Every single one of them.
It's great to hear. Absolutely great to hear. Well, we're going to keep close tabs on this from now throughout the election, and just hope that this comes out the right way. We're tired of Democrats voting like Republicans, and we've got to take care of that.
Well, you got that right.
We've got to take care of that. It's up to us to take care of that issue and not let the status quo just keep going on and on and on. Thanks so much for calling.
Uh-huh.
Great to hear from you.
Bye-bye.
Well, California's all riled up over this out in the 36th District, and we wish the Winograd campaign the best of luck in this, and I know they're out working hard, and I know they've pulled off a surprise already on keeping the endorsement away from Harmon this past Saturday. So they're working hard, and I think they can get it done. We like to talk about our Republican friends in Washington a lot, and I know a lot of you know about this Mr. Noe mess, that good friend of the White House. The people in the White House are pals with some really unusual people. I think you've all known that by now. In May of 2003, the White House and House Speaker Dennis Hastert, get this, recommended that Tom Noe from Ohio get a seat on the influential 11-member committee. Treasury Secretary John Snow appointed Mr. Noe less than 6 months after the Toledo area coin dealer expressed interest in joining the Mint Committee. And he expressed that interest to Henrietta Fore, who was director of the Mint. And he said, and I quote, "I've always had interest in getting more involved on the national level, he wrote to her. Oh, I bet he did. So Mr. Noe's appointment to that committee and eventually chairmanship of the Citizens Coinage Advisory Committee enabled him to expand his reach into the federal government. And there's 2,700 pages of emails and other committee records released by the Mint to the Toledo Blade, good old Toledo Blade newspaper from Toledo, Ohio. And the newspaper had to file a Freedom of Information Act to get those records. Documents and interviews reveal that Mr. Noe, who has pleaded not guilty to a 53-count felony theft and corruption indictment for his handling of Ohio's Rare Coin Fund, Mr. Taft's, he's one of Mr. Taft's fair-haired boys in Ohio. Mr. Taft, the governor himself, having pled guilty to charges last summer. And he pled not guilty to federal charges that he laundered money to President Bush's reelection campaign. Oh. He courted Mint officials at a high-priced restaurant in Washington, sought information on behalf of fellow coin dealers about future coins to be minted, and pushed the Mint and lawmakers to use higher-grade metals in the nation's coins. Now, what interest did he have in that? Damian Lavera, a spokesman for the Democratic National Committee, said Tom Noe saw a golden money pot, and he wanted a piece of it. Unfortunately, the Republicans in Washington were all too willing to help out their friends if they gave enough to the campaigns. In 2003 and 2004, Mr. Noe earned the elite status of Bush Pioneer because he raised at least $100,000 for the president's campaign. Mr. Noe and his wife Bernadette, a former chairman of the Lucas County, Ohio Republican Party, gave more than $200,000 to GOP candidates and causes. Where did they get that kind of money? They stole it from the citizens of Ohio because they were put in this position this rare coin fund in Ohio, and they literally robbed the citizens of Ohio blind. Robbed them blind. And the governor of Ohio, Mr. Taft, appointed this man to that job. And don't you know, they kept it all secret as long as they could. They knew this whole thing was blowing up, and they kept it secret as long as they could. Now, the White House didn't return messages seeking comment on this whole mess about taking illegal campaign funds from Mr. Noe. I guess I don't blame them for not wanting to talk about it. What do you think? There's a lot of stuff they don't want to talk about nowadays. Our friend Mr. Tom DeLay, he was appearing at this War on Christians conference. How about that? We had the War on Christmas, phony baloney charge thought up, I think, by Bill O'Reilly, and then a bunch of the charlatans jumped on the bandwagon like people are having a real war on Christmas, a straw man argument. You know, there are those who say Tom DeLay lost his job as House Majority Leader because he was indicted by a Texas grand jury for money laundering and conspiracy, or because of his extensive ties to law-breaking lobbyist Jack Abramoff. But they'd be wrong. Because according to DeLay, the reason he fell from power is because he was a Christian. Oh, my God. He's being persecuted because he's a Christian, Tom DeLay. Is there nothing this guy won't cling to? Is there nowhere he won't go to try and salvage his dirty, rotten image and get back in power again? You know, Tom DeLay is pure filth politically. I mean, there's no other way you can put it. For 2 or 3 years on my program, I tried to get somebody to call in and tell me they were proud of Tom DeLay. And finally, one day, some guy here locally did call in and say he was proud of Tom DeLay. Ooh, you have to wonder about somebody like that, and you really have to wonder about the voters. Is it Sugarland, Texas, where he's from? I think it is. After all that's come to fore about Tom DeLay, you have to wonder, what the hell is wrong with the people in Tom DeLay's district to want to put him back in office again? What could they be thinking? This guy is a slime ball of the highest order. There isn't anybody dirtier in politics than Tom DeLay. And I think you're going to have it all proven shortly that so many of these charges are absolutely true. That he laundered money, he took illegal campaign contributions, he threatened other lawmakers with his power, threatened other congressmen if they didn't go his way, it was going to be the highway. You can't do that. But he did. He got away with it for a long, long time. That's why they call him the hammer, you know. That's a term he just relishes, the hammer. Tom DeLay's a rat. And this latest, as a Christian, this latest charge of his is ludicrous. Absolutely ludicrous that he's being persecuted because he's a Christian. Man, oh man. Well, I don't know. I hope we don't have to put up with Tom DeLay all that much longer. One thing I want to talk about, I was wanting to get to it today, but we're not going to have time. And I wanted to get your feelings on it. We're going to talk tomorrow, I think, a little bit about this. How many of you know about this turning the all-volunteer army into an army for hire, this Blackwater USA company? Blackwater USA Vice Chairman Kofor Black announced that the private security company is ready to shift from a security role to a more overt combat role, essentially becoming an army for hire. Should we have mercenaries in this country? Should we have an army for hire in this country, a private army for hire that is really answerable to no one? Is that the kind of thing that we want to go on? This company's already depleting the ranks of the special forces because they're paying well, and I have nothing against people getting paid well. But our special forces, our elite special forces, are being depleted because this private army is hiring them and paying them $50,000 a year where they don't make that much. The average senior, actually that's not true, the average senior special operations officer makes $50,000 a year from the U.S. government, and employees in private security firms in Iraq often make more than $1,000 a day. So I guess we understand why guys are doing that. But the idea of a army for hire here in this country, that rubs me the wrong way. It really does. I would not like to see that happen. I mean, we already know that this company, this is the same company that was paid, I think, $2.3 million to protect Bremer when he was over there. We didn't even have our own military guarding him, Ambassador Bremer. No, that's a mistake. They awarded Blackwater a $21 million contract to guard then-Ambassador Paul Bremer. $21 million to guard Paul Bremer when we had our own forces over there on the scene. I do not understand. Well, yes, I do understand how that could happen. It's money paid, you know, quid pro quo. We do something for you, you do something for us. And that money's being passed out like it's candy over there, just like it's candy. Hey, I do want to thank everybody for listening to the program today, and I urge all you folks out in California to go to Marcy Winograd's website and help out any way you can. The people listening across the country, I hope you will donate some money to her campaign. They need the money. This is a seat we need to take. We'll have if Marcy wins, we'll have a real Democrat in office instead of Jane Harmon, and that would be a good thing for the people. A great thing. I want to thank you once again for being with us today. We'll be back tomorrow. We're here every Monday through Friday with lots to talk about and your phone calls as well. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you tomorrow on the Guy James Show.